Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the MythBusters program today, the Ron Paul Liberty Report. Co-host is Chris Rossini, and Chris is with us today. Chris, good morning. Good to see you today.
Great to be with you again, Dr. Paul.
Good. What do you have in store? What kind of enlightenment are we going to portray to our viewers?
Well, today is Friday, and for most people, it's payday, and you take your paycheck to the bank and deposit it into the bank. So we're going to talk about what the bank does after you make that deposit. And most people, I'm sure, are under the impression that the money is stored there for you because the bank says you could come at any time and withdraw it. So it seemed like being equivalent to like taking an old couch to a storage facility. And he says, hey, come back, get your couch at any time. But it's very different, isn't it, Dr. Paul? So please talk about what the bank does once, let's say, $100 is deposited into that bank.
Yeah, there's a lot of myths associated with this. The big myth is that the banks are to protect our money. And the banks are designed, you know, to do exactly the opposite. But the analogy of taking some goods of a private individual and putting in storage is a good analogy, and that means that you have the right to go get it. People who stored it for you and gave you a service, they might be able to charge you a fee. But if you stored something and you say, and the owner estimates that, well, he'll be back in a year. I think I can rent that furniture out for 6 months and he'll never know. Well, that would be fraud and he shouldn't do it. But the whole idea of providing a service for storage is well known. But that's not exactly the way the banks work. The idea that you pay for service happens many times, whether you're storing furniture or whether you take your clothes to the cleaner. You wouldn't ever expect that they would cheat on you or not give it back your item back. With a charge of the service they gave you, but not to have used it and given it to somebody else, that is wrong. It's immoral. It's something that unfortunately has been legalized in the monetary system and one of the big problems that we have to face.
Right. And so the banks, if you could talk about what fractional reserve banking is, because what do they do? Let's say I put $100 in. What do they do with that $100 specifically?
Well, you would think they'd put it in the bank, and if they were just holding it there, they might charge you a fee for handling your paperwork. But if you put the $100 in, they could, within minutes, turn around and loan out $90. So your $100 immediately can become $190. And that is the way the whole system works because banks have figured it out. The system knows that not everybody goes and gets their money out right away. They leave it in their checking account. And the banks they're told under the law, well, you don't have to really hold that money, even though the money is there for two people at one time. But they say, well, you have to have a little bit of reserve. And that means, well, you can loan out 90%, you have to have 10% reserve. But the real irony of this is if you don't have enough money on a certain day of the week for your reserves to match up what the law says, they can go and borrow. It's overnight borrowing. And they just go and borrow from another bank who happens to have more reserve. So they don't even follow the fractional reserve banking law that says you have to hold about 10% in there. And it's all great. It's the consumer thinks it's good because there's more credit available, and the banks thinks it's good because they get to expand the money supply. This is inflation. The Fed creates the baseline, the monetary base, out of thin air, and they make it available, and they can loan to banks, and then the banks can take these funds, any funds that they get. They can loan those out, and other than the fact that eventually it has to be paid for, it's not the market. It's in an artificial market. It causes a lot of trouble, and that is the reason that, of course, there's a collusion between central bankings. The central bank, the Federal Reserve, was created by big banks because they wanted to be protected and they wanted to have this ability to loan money out to people at will. And this has served the interest because, you know, the consumer who wants to get a loan and maybe he doesn't qualify, well, there's more credit. But there's more temptation, and of course, there's a lot more debt involved, and it's a major cause of the distortions that have to be corrected eventually. But on the short run, as so many things are on what government gets involved in, on the short run, it seems to be a benefit. There's, you know, there's a lot of temptation with this, and this is good for the banks. It looks like it's good for consumers on the short run, but it's really very bad ideas. It should be considered immoral and it should be illegal because it's fraudulent. But the banks have been in this for a long, long time. And of course, this whole system is rigged against the people because the banks get these special privileges.
Right. Now, here's the critical question, because everyone is under the impression that they can put their money into a bank, and everyone is under the impression they can all go and get the money out whenever they want. However, what happens if everyone actually does go to the bank to get their money? Obviously, the banks don't have it. So let's say there's a panic or a crisis. What happens, Dr. Paul?
Well, it's happened many, many times over history, in our history, because even before we had the Federal Reserve, well, we had national banking. But even in between, we had banking systems that permitted this. And there'd be a panic because the people will say, yes, it seems to be working. Last year, I could get my money out. But I see these people lining up at the bank, and they want to get their money out. At that time, money was real. It was probably either gold or, you know, certificates that represented gold. So they want to get their money and protect themselves. And it is a panic. And, of course, the bank doesn't have the money. People get very upset with this because they're losing their shirt. And this is what happened, of course, in the 1930s. The system wasn't built to try to delay the inevitable, and that is the correction is necessary. So the panic is very real. But this comes, you know, as because banks are out there loaning it to other people, and they're loaning it and making bad loans because of this. And it was, in a way, the whole system was designed to protect the banks, and the Federal Reserve was started by banks to be the lender of last resort because they knew there would be these panics, and they knew they had to take care of them and calm them down. So they said that, well, we'll provide the credit. And the banks then, or the central bank would come in, and they would be the lender of last resort and try to, you know, keep things going. But, you know, unfortunately, that even that wasn't enough. The panic is a panic. If the money isn't there, there is a real problem with this. Now, so they had to add something else in here to try to give protection and calm the markets to prevent the necessary correction in all the malinvestment and all the debt. So they invented this idea that, well, we ought to insure these deposits. If they're insured, the people won't panic and come and want to take their money out. And so they had the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, which means the taxpayer that might not be directly involved in a bank failing, they would be held responsible, and they would have to bail out with more taxes or more inflation. So that just made things worse because the FDIC, people are reassured. They put the big sign up, protected by the FDIC. People said, well, we're secure. Yeah, we're secure in that we can get something back, but you're not going to be secure in the value of what you get back again. And that is the big problem. But the FDIC contributes to the moral hazard. Easy credit contributes to it. People are making mistakes. Easy credit, lower interest rates in market, avoiding the signs that there's been too much spending and not enough savings. And the FDIC just continues this, assuming that this will protect the depositors. And it does work to some degree. Some people, you know, the bank goes bad and the FDIC comes in. But all that's doing is shifting the responsibility. I mean, if a bank is working and there's deposits in the bank and they have a collapse, You know, the bank should suffer, the depositor probably has to suffer too. But under these conditions, what they do is they pass the penalty to everybody else. You know, they'll pass it on to other taxpayers, or they will pass it on to everybody by inflating the currency. And when they distribute the pain and suffering to more people, it's diluted and people don't quite notice it. But what it does, it doesn't allow the bubble to shrink at all. And the bubble keeps getting bigger and bigger, and the people keep getting deceived until finally it will burst. And we've been through it for so many times. There's been so many bubbles that I've witnessed being bursting, in my lifetime. And it eventually comes. The markets are very, very powerful. And so the Federal Reserve being the lender of last resort, the FDIC, taking care of this won't do. And people just ignore the fact that they think it can last, and it does such wonderful things. You can deficit finance. The politicians love it. And you can make sure the welfare state will last forever. And you can have warfare, and you don't have to worry about it. It's all these distortions at the expense of sound money, at the with adding the possibility of a big collapse and a big panic, and of course loss of liberty. So it's very, very detrimental, but it's very seductive, and it's very hard for people to understand why not having a lender of last resort and having government insurance, which is not insurance at all. It just means we're going to guarantee that we'll print more money or steal it from somebody to bail out bad banking practices. So it's a bad system. It's destined to fail. And right now we're living with the consequence of worldwide inflation of a fiat currency, with the dollar being the reserve currency of the world. And there's still a fair amount of trust in the dollar, but it's very, very fragile. And someday there will be a panic out of this system. There will be a need to revamp this, and that will not be easy, because all these good things that they have been doing with deficit financing will just dissipate, because the conditions will be much worse. Everybody become dependent on the government, the business community, the banking community, the welfare recipients. And when confidence is lost in the dollar, they have a major political problem involved. And just think of what the world would be like if you had a Venezuela episode where people lose total confidence. I mean, it's a horrendous event. People say, oh no, that's different, because we're able to manage it, and we have smart people at the Fed, and they make all kinds of excuses to perpetuate this. And the one argument that is on their sides, it does take a little bit of pain if you want to correct it. It's like an addiction. The whole system is addicted to this system, which is artificial. And if somebody is being removed from an addiction to a drug, believe me, it's not exactly fun. So removing the addiction to this monetary system wouldn't be a lot of fun, but it could be short-lived, and you could save the economy and save our liberties. But the way we're going now, we're going to continue this way. We're going to make people feel better, and we'll keep bailing out. QE's, work, so to speak. We keep us going. Now they're already talking about the next QE in 2020. They have to prepare for trillions of dollars, because they know, the bankers and the central bankers, they know this is fragile, and there's going to be a need for more bailouts, and they're already sending signals out there. Don't worry, we may raise interest rates a little bit now, but when the big crunch returns, we will be ready with feeding it into the system and feeding the money. And that'll last until the world says, maybe this dollar is not quite as played up to be. And then the big panic will occur, and that will be a very great threat to all of us.
Okay. Let's finish off, Dr. Paul, with some food for thought. Obviously, the government and banks have created a gigantic house of cards. And as you mentioned, it's inevitable that it has to come down. When that happens, we hope and we work towards making it so that people understand what sound money is, so that maybe they could call for sound money instead of replacing it with another house of cards. So let's talk about how sound money and banking would work in that condition. How would people take their gold or silver denominated paychecks to the bank, and how could the bank operate and actually make money in an honest way?
Well, the opponents to this idea would say that, you can't do that. It's unregulated. And we have to have the Fed writing up a lot of regulations and protect the consumer. Well, look at what they've done to protect the consumer. We already see the middle class being wiped out, which is a consequence of destroying a currency. And so it's a fallacy to think that they're going to protect the consumer. But if we get to that point, and hopefully, and we've had an experience with this, but there's always this temptation to loan more out than they have. Even under the gold standard, the governments did it. They used to be 100% reserves and went down to 50% and 30%, and they kept squeezing out to, you know, expand the credit because the immediate effect is, you know, a stimulus to the economy. But what would happen is it would be seen just like it would be seen like you're taking your clothes to be clean. You're going to make a deposit, and you expect your clothes to be returned, and you pay your fee for the services you receive. And if you had a gold certificate or if you had gold bullion, you could take it to the bank. And if you're just going to have them hold your gold bullion, they'll charge you a fee, and nobody else should have access to it. They can't loan half of it out. Just because you haven't picked it up for 2 years doesn't mean that they have a right to loan it out. So they would have to be able to make a lot less money instead of just creating money out of thin air, which really makes a lot more money. They would have to just charge fees for storage. If they don't do that, then they have to figure out who's going to protect this. But the gold should be there. Now, you say, well, how's the bank going to make any money at all? Well, they'd have to make money by the services, and they could loan money out. Well, how do you mean? Well, how can they loan the money out if it's yours too? Well, you'd have to agree. So these actually one thing that you see today, which is sensible in it, is if you put money into a CD and said, I don't want to touch my money for a year, then the bank has the right to loan that out again, but not for 10 years, only for a year. And that would be restrained. So there would be rules. This argument that there would be no rules is wrong. You can't commit fraud. And everything they do today is fraudulent. So the market, the free market, is very, very tough. It'd be much tougher regulation. No fraud whatsoever on what the banks would be able to do. So and then there could be insurance. It could be private insurance. And the private insurance companies would probably examine the bank records. And they probably would charge their insurance at the rate of the safety of the bank, and that they're not cheating, and they would have their audits. So there would be, supervision. But most people in all areas of government, they think, well, only government can do this. So they pick the worst kind of people and put them in government and put them in the bureaucracy, and they're supposed to take care of us. At the same time, it could be done much better doing the same service. And this whole idea that there would be no regulations whatsoever is just a total fallacy. And I think that people have to realize that under the gold standard, there's a much better chance of having steady economic growth. There could be distortions that need corrections. There's always going to be people making mistakes, making a bad loan here and there. But it wouldn't ever be where there'd be huge bubbles, and there wouldn't be an ability for the government to tax another person to bail somebody out or bail out the banks. So it would be completely different, but it would not be unregulated. It'd be regulated by the rules and by contracts and by the whole principle of you can't commit fraud. And our whole monetary system is based on fraud. And the myth that they're protecting our money. They are not protecting our money. They're participating in the destruction of our money. And they continue to lie to us about, you know, how much the money is being devalued. There's tremendous inflation. There's tremendous inflation in stocks and bonds, but even in the kind of products that the average person uses. So I've argued for a long time that's one reason the middle class is furious. And they don't understand the money issue, but they're furious. And they say, by golly, I don't have enough money. If they could just pass a law, instead of making $9, I want to make $15. It's going to solve all my problems. Well, they're missing the whole thing because the cost of living is going up and the standard of living is going down because the value of the money is going down. And it's as a result of this fraudulent monetary system that we have. The founders were right. They recognized it. They saw the runaway inflation of the continental dollar. They said only gold and silver could be legal tender. And the government was not no authority to establish a central bank. And they couldn't emit bills of credit. That's no paper money. So they knew what was going on. But unfortunately, the strings weren't tight enough to hold them in check. And the temptation is too great. The temptation of destruction of money has been around for thousands of years. At one time, they did it by just diluting the metal or clipping the coins or doing something else to deceive the people. But ultimately, all those efforts never work. You cannot deceive the people forever. And what they're doing today will not continue to deceive the people. And I would say the deception is being recognized now, and the anger is there, and it was reflected in the last election. They reflected the problem, but unfortunately, I haven't heard the solution to this problem because they ought to be talking about the banking system, the Federal Reserve, and the value of money and why gold makes better money than fiat money. So the sooner we learn that, the better it will be for all of us. And I think that's the only way we can move in the direction of peace and prosperity for the maximum number of people. Chris, I want to thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you, Dr. Paul.
And I want to thank our viewers today for tuning in, and please come back to the Ron Paul Liberty Report soon.